Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This podcast is made possible by our supporters over on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get your own RSS feed with ad-free shows and extra episodes every month, then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro.
And we're back for episode 333. That's got to be a good luck sign, huh?
Yeah, I think so. The triple threes.
My name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
So that's got to be some kind of good luck sign. So we'll see. See how the show goes.
Maybe that should be like my lucky number in gambling. Maybe. 333. Triple threes.
Did I ever tell you about my lucky number when I go gambling is 16? Like whenever I
really,
yeah, because one time, and I don't know why I always bet on 16. One time I went to the casino, it was really late one night. My buddy Joe, who I used to live with, was my roommate. He woke me up at like 2 a.m. once. And was like, hey, go to a casino with me. I was like, all right. You know, I was young. I was like 25, 26 years old. I was like, I can do that. So I get up, we go to the casino, and he wants to play poker. And he goes to the poker room. And goes to get at a table, and I'm not like a public poker player. Like I like playing with friends, but I don't like playing, you know, professionally or anything like that.
Right.
So I was like, I'm gonna go downstairs and just hang out. So I went downstairs and I walked up to the roulette table. Now keep in mind, it's like 2:30 in the morning. There's nobody at the roulette table. It's just an empty table. I walked up. I brought $20 bill with me. And I walked up to the table, and I just put 20 down. I said, put it on 16. She's like, okay. She spun. It hit 16. She was like, whoa. So that's like 32-1 or 36-1, whatever that is. And so she shoves this whole huge thing of chips at me. And I was like, I'm going to leave a bunch up there. So I left a couple of stacks still up there. I said, do it again. And she rolls it. The ball, and it hits 16 again.
Wow.
I walked out of there with like $1,400.
Holy crap.
I tipped her like $200. And so that month, I paid for my Xbox 360 and my rent all in one fell swoop.
Which casino was it?
The Imperial Palace in Biloxi.
Okay. Yeah, that... On the rare occasion that I do gamble in Biloxi, that's where I like to go. I haven't won nearly that amount of money before, but I did win in Texas Hold'em years ago. I won almost $300.
And you know what? I haven't gambled since, so I'm in the red, or the black. I mean, whatever means you're ahead. I'm in the black.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, you're in the black.
So they're That's not awesome. Getting me. They're not going to get that. Me anymore. I'm like, I'm way ahead. So they're never going to get me back.
Yeah, quit while you're ahead.
Mushmouth, welcome to the chat room.
Yeah, welcome, Mushmouth.
He's in there yelling at somebody. I don't know what he's doing in there. welcome to the show tonight. We're episode 333 here, and I guess we should do our Tears of the Kingdom minute before we go into everything.
Well, mine'll be quick because I haven't played all that much. I did find. Do you remember that island in Breath of the Wild where you go to it and you're like stripped of all your armor and your weapons? It's in like the south. I think it's the southeast corner of the map. It's like way off by itself.
I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
I went there and found a hidden chasm. And you have to go to one of those coliseums because that's the only area that's in that little portion of the depths. Mm-hmm. And of course, you have to fight a ton of enemies, and you get Midna's helmet from Twilight Princess, which was really cool.
Yeah,
so,
I think I got that already. I think because I've already done that little island you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I just randomly remembered it. And I'm like, I wonder if like what you can do with that island. So went and did that. And that's really been the highlight because I was out of town this past weekend, which I guess I could say that real quick. Shout out to the Game Terminal in Nashville, because that was one of the coolest places I've ever been. Samantha and I went to Nashville for the Ed Sheeran concert, and the concert was great. He was really good live. It was like a 2.5 hour show plus the two opening acts before him, but really, really good concert. We both enjoyed it. There were over 70,000 people at that stadium, which was I'd love to know the amount of money they made from that, because it had to have been insane. But before that, we went to the Game Terminal, which is an area of like pinball machines, old arcade machines, which a lot of the cabinets were free to play, which was really cool. And they also had outdoor games like cornhole. They had like life-size beer pong, which was really cool. They had like solo cups that were about as big as I am.
That's cool.
Yeah. But it was a really, really cool place. And I put several pictures in the Discord for people to see. So really, really good trip. I spent a lot of time in a car. I've been in a car for like 13 hours in the last 2 days.
That's a long drive. I mean, even for me.
Yeah, it's like 6 hours.
You know, straight north, it's still, you know, pretty big drive.
And then I'm driving to Jacksonville this weekend. Ooh. So, yeah, so the feature is playing at the I believe it's the Spotlight International Film Festival. It's playing Sunday morning, and it's going to play in an actual theater, which is really cool. And then our mutual friend Steve Wise, his pilot he directed, Blackwater Blues, is going to be playing there as well. So going to meet up with him at some point Sunday, and then we'll see what happens. But feature's still doing real well in the film festival.
Which film festival was that you were saying?
I believe it's called the Spotlight International Film Festival in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think I may have submitted to that one back when Monsters was on its festival run, but I don't think we got accepted to that one. It sounds really familiar. Might have been for Survey that it might sound familiar, because I think we Survey played there.
I wonder where Survey didn't play.
Yeah, no kidding. Damn, film's been in like 800 film festivals, and it's still not available online. I need to get Steve about that.
But yeah, really good weekend. I am taking next Monday off of work because I'm going to need a break after all this traveling.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a lot.
But yeah, what about you?
As far as Tears of the Kingdom, I got my Wind Waker pants and my another pair of pants, but I don't remember which ones they were. They look almost identical. I think one of them might have been the Twilight Princess pants or something like that. And, I got the Wind Waker pants and the hat. So I got those two. And now I just got to find the tunic.
It's funny, I have the tunic, but not the pants or the hat.
And I found those by going exploring the Archipelagos Islands, the Sky Islands. And I kept running across all these different treasure chest that had treasure maps in them for the underground, and that's That's how I found them. Just I found like three treasure maps, and then I went down and I found those, and I couldn't get to the third treasure map because there is a there's something down there I got to fight, and I can't fight it, and I don't know how, so I'm gonna have to go watch a video on how to fight it. It's one of the, another one of those three-headed dragon.
Oh, you probably found the King Leoc.
Yeah, the King Leoc.
Yeah. Yeah, because it has a fire head, an ice head, and a thunder head.
Yes, like two hits.
I haven't even tried to fight yet.
You can't. I mean, I have like 15 hearts, and I'm I actually managed to take down two of the heads because I was like a pillar that I just kept running behind, and it kept trying to come around, like just basically running around in a circle on this pillar. That I just poke out, shoot the head, go back behind the pillar, then poke out, shoot the head, go back behind the pillar. And kept doing that over and over again, took down two of the heads. And of course, I tried to get the third head, but it was the lightning head, and it hit me like twice and just destroyed me.
That lightning is tough because there's, if you don't have like an elixir, there's not really much you can do about it.
Well, there was a helmet that I found. That was electricity. It has like resistance to electricity on it, but I don't have anything else to go with it. So I tried putting that on. It really didn't do much. So,
yeah, I haven't come across one of those yet. I've killed a fire one and a frost one. I haven't tried to fight a thunder one yet, and the king one. I got to get more hearts.
Yeah,
because I don't have as many as you do.
Ever since getting my butt kicked on that big long bridge in the middle of the map from the one Gliok, I guess fire is what it is. Just got my butt kicked by that one. I've been really timid to try taking on another one. So every time I see one, I just avoid it.
It's cool that they're in the game because it's a nice throwback to the original Zelda. Because I don't think Gliok has been in much, if any, of the Zelda games since.
Yeah, but I don't remember them being that hard in the original game.
No, they're not. they're not nearly that hard.
It's ridiculous, man. Like, after a while, I'm just like, why do you make it this hard, Nintendo? It doesn't need to be that hard.
They like to troll.
but that's, I guess that's going to bring us to the end of our Tears of the Kingdom minute.
This has been your Tears of the Kingdom update on Nerd Cave Retro.
But anything else before we go into the news this evening?
No, I don't think so.
Well, here we go. Some of tonight's stories were submitted to us by Mr. Armez Jackson and I Am the Rampage. And if you have a story you'd like us to cover, send them to nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. And this first story comes from GameRant.com. Sega president comments on the possibility of a Sega Saturn Mini. Sega president Yukio Sugino comments on the possibility of developing a miniature console based on the classic Sega Saturn machine. In the last few years, gaming companies have been producing ways for fans to play retro games, blah, 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 the Sega Genesis Mini. Let's see, where is his actual quote here? I read it a little while ago, and now I can't find it. This is a long article.
It's,
where did it
it's
go?
Above the picture of the Sega Saturn and the Dreamcast.
Oh, yeah, here it is. It says, commented, hold on. Says Sugino commented that they would consider it once they're in a position where the company can openly develop it together with gamers who loved the Sega Saturn and Dreamcast. Now, what exactly does that mean?
Are they wanting to do a Saturn Dreamcast combo?
I mean, that's what I thought they would do anyway, because why do a Saturn and a Dreamcast Mini when you could just combine them and do both? Because he said the main issue of adapting the Sega Saturn to a mini console is due to the hardware itself. It was historically a console that that it was kind of really weird to develop for, even for Sega. Like, it was a really weird machine as far as its hardware goes. But, I mean, that's, with emulation these days, why couldn't they just, you know, it can't be that hard to emulate this stuff. I mean, I'm no computer expert when it comes to that kind of stuff, but it can't be that hard.
It makes me wonder this, like, so if they did a Saturn Dreamcast combo and they did like a mini version of it, of course I would get it. But has the ship sailed on the mini consoles? Because Nintendo hasn't done one since the SNES. And yes, Sega put out the Genesis Mini 2, was it last year or 2 years ago? But I don't know, like, would the demand be there?
For the hardcore audience, yes. Like, people like Joey Image, you know.
He'd be first in line.
But was it popular enough to where if they did, you know, a million machine run of it, would they sell that many? I mean, maybe they should do like a pre-order thing to see how many they should make or how popular it would be. I don't know.
I don't think it would hurt to do it, but I think if you did just a Saturn Mini on its own, I don't think that would be a good idea, because I don't think the Saturn really did that well when it came out originally. Like, I never owned one. I never really played one.
Yeah.
I'd already moved on to, you know, other consoles. Like, I had a Dreamcast for the Sonic Adventure games and a few others, but...
Well, I think the Dreamcast itself has enough nostalgia attached to it that people really love that system and would buy a Mini. And that's why I say, yeah. I mean, just make a Dreamcast Mini, but just put the Sega Saturn stuff on it.
It's like a bonus.
Yeah, nobody really wants a Sega Saturn Mini. I mean, there's some people that do. I don't want to say that no one wants it, but that's got to be a really small portion of, you know, the Sega audience. And I really, a lot of the stuff that was on the Dreamcast, I think they should do bundles, you know, of the same games, but just, you know, remastered for the Switch or Xbox or PS5 or whatever. And then go in and buy a bundle of like 5 to 10 Dreamcast games. You know, I think that would be kind of the smart thing to do too, because you could take a second bite at the apple for a lot of these games that probably didn't make a lot of money back in the day, because, you know, this thing was fighting for its life from the second it came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you do a mini, I like your idea of marketing it as the Dreamcast, but then throw in like a Sega Saturn games as an option. Because I remember when the SNES Mini came out, they included Star Fox 2, which had never been released to the public. And you got to unlock it by just beating the first level in the original Star Fox. So it'd be kind of cool if, like, say, you beat the first zone in Sonic Adventure for the Dreamcast Mini and you unlock a Saturn game. And so on and so forth. Like, you do like little very minor things to unlock Saturn games as more of an incentive for people to buy it.
I mean, that's actually a really good idea.
I think that's the only way that it's going to work. Me personally.
Yeah.
But I would get it just because I liked the Dreamcast. I'd be curious about the Saturn. I just don't know if it would have the same pull or demand as like a Genesis.
Yeah.
Because people loved the Genesis, you know, growing up.
And I don't want to see how, like, maybe Sega could do something where they do, you know, it looks like a little Dreamcast, but it comes with a couple of different controllers. Like, do a mini Dreamcast with like a Genesis controller, a Saturn controller, and a Dreamcast controller, and then have it loaded with like all the, like, a bunch of Master System, Genesis, you know, all like games from every system, charge like $150-$200 for it, and then have, you know, a little hard drive on it with enough space to where you could have a website where you could go to sega.com and download more games for it, you know, from those libraries. Like, that could be a solution. That could be a bit of a solution to maybe some of this stuff we talked about last week with all the games that are disappearing. You know, maybe something Nintendo should think about too.
Well, it makes too much sense, so Nintendo's not going to do it.
Yeah, never.
Our next story comes to us from NintendoLife.com. Nintendo's Famicom 40th anniversary website is a treasure trove of trivia. I like saying treasure trove.
Say that three times fast.
No, I can't. Nintendo's Famicom has turned 40 years old, if you can believe it. The little console that could pretty much single-handedly save the video game industry with classics such as Donkey Kong, Super Mario Brothers, and The Legend of Zelda, and now Nintendo is paying homage with a comprehensive website celebrating everything Famicom. The website is naturally entirely in Japanese, so you'll need to either wing it or use your browser's translation tool if there's one available. Either way, there's a lot to delve into here. You've got an awesome gallery of classic games from the system, and you can even swap between views of the front cover, cartridge, and main menu screen. There's also an incredible history segment that looks into the Famicom chronology, letting you check out beautiful high-res artwork and sprites of some of your favorite games from the late 80s and early 90s. Finally, if you want a deep dive into the hardware itself, Nintendo has you covered there too. This is really cool. Mm-hmm. This is one of the cooler web-based retro gaming things that I've seen all year.
Yeah, and you know, if this goes to show that Nintendo knows that they have, like they said, a treasure trove of a library of stuff between the Famicom and the Nintendo in America. Like, why can't we get all this stuff available in some way? There's got to be a way to have all this stuff available again.
It would easily be doable. It's just for some reason they don't want to.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. But either way, the website is a really cool thing. And if no one's looked at it yet, go out of your way to do it, because it's really, really cool.
I mean, it's in Japanese, but you can still see like a lot of cool pictures and stuff.
Yeah, you can still see the visuals.
Yeah. This is a cool story from Engadget.com. Cloud gaming platform AntStream Arcade brings over 1,000 retro games to Xbox. AntStream Arcade is offering over 1,300 retro game titles on Xbox One and Series X/S, with notable titles such as Space Invaders, Metal Slug, and Bubble Bobble. Company says these titles will be playable instantly without additional downloads or installation via its cloud gaming platform, with more titles being added every week. This is notable as AntStream will be the first third-party game streaming service on Xbox. The service will support cloud-based game saves, an online scoreboard, and the ability to pick up your game from multiple devices. It is already available on Mac, PC, Linux, Android TV, Fire Stick, and Samsung TVs, but this marks the first time it is coming to gaming console. And this is really cool because, you know, Microsoft likes working with other companies like this. And this is a really cool thing. I mean, this is... let's see. There's a one-time lifetime purchase option for $79.99 or $29.99 annually. So why would you not plop down $80 for a lifetime purchase is beyond me. But this seems like it's completely worth it.
Yeah, I mean, for over 1,300 games, absolutely. The thing about this article, the sentence that surprises me the most: AntStream will be the first third-party game streaming service on Xbox. Mm-hmm. Granted, I've been out of the Xbox game for a while, but that's honestly really surprising to me, mm-hmm. knowing like how much Microsoft likes working with other companies. That's just so surprising to me.
I'm not trying to sound like an Xbox fanboy or anything. Like, I love I think the Xbox 360 was one of the greatest gaming consoles of all time.
But agreed.
Microsoft is always, like, you know, extending a hand out to other companies. I mean, they've, you know, they're friendly with Nintendo. You know, they were friendly with Sony until the whole Activision Blizzard thing, and then they started fighting. So I don't understand why this isn't more of a thing, even with Nintendo. Like, why couldn't this be a service on Nintendo Switch Online?
Yeah, I have no idea, but I think $80 for over 1,300 retro games, if I had an Xbox, like, this would be a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to get this, especially just $80 for a lifetime purchase.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up from GameRant.com, lucky Nintendo GameCube fan makes Holy Grail game find. Let's see. A lucky Nintendo GameCube fan recently made a Holy Grail game find by picking up a copy of the Metroid Prime and Legend of Zelda Wind Waker dual pack. There are all kinds of rare Nintendo GameCube games that go for ridiculous prices online, and this combo pack is just one of them. While nearly all retro games have skyrocketed in price these last few years, it seems the GameCube titles especially have gotten more expensive. Obviously, this applies to the most rarest games, with titles like Pokemon Box going for thousands of dollars online. The Metroid Prime Zelda Wind Waker bundle isn't quite as expensive as that, but it still sells for a pretty penny on sites like eBay. It's listed for around $1,000 on eBay. The combo pack was only released as part of a special GameCube holiday bundle in 2005, which is why it's so hard to track down nowadays.
Yeah, you want to know why I put this in here and this makes me sick to my stomach?
Why is that?
Because I had this dual pack.
Oh, no.
And I sold it when I sold my GameCube back in like 2000. I think I sold it around 2007 or 2008. I had this Metroid Prime Zelda Wind Waker dual pack.
That would make me sick too. I'd want to throw up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never had this combo pack, but I do remember seeing it, you know, around the holidays. I haven't thought of this dual pack since it was on sale back in the day.
I didn't even think about it till I saw this article and I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
I had this. This is how I played Wind Waker.
Man. It also says here, besides this combo pack, there's also the standalone Wind Waker Four Swords Adventures. That's another game I haven't thought of in forever. The special Ocarina of Time Master Quest port and Twilight Princess. Out of all the standalone Zelda games, Twilight Princess tends to be more expensive, which I don't understand. Though all of them go for more than brand new game releases do nowadays.
Yeah, these dual packs were something that Nintendo was doing towards the end of the GameCube, because I didn't even get my GameCube until 2002, 2003, somewhere around there. It was already like a couple of years into its lifespan.
Right.
And I got it. And that's when I started playing, you know, the first game I ever bought for it was, I bought it and I bought the Star Wars Rogue Squadron. It was like the first, is it Rogue Squadron or was it?
Was it Rebel Leader?
Rebel Assault.
Rebel Assault was, it was because Rogue Squadron 1 was for the N64. Mm-hmm. And then Rogue Squadron 2 was one of the first games that came out for the GameCube.
Mm-hmm. And so I would go to like GameStop or whatever the game stores were and buy, you know, some of the older titles for cheaper when I had it. And I played my GameCube up until the time I sold it, you know, around 2007 or 8. But I know I had this dual pack, the Metroid Prime and Zelda, and I saw this and I was like, man, this just hurts me deep down inside. And it hurts so bad.
Yeah. You're a bigger person than I am, because if that were me, I wouldn't have included this in the news section.
Because the last game I ever got for it was Twilight Princess. And by that time, you know, that was the last game released for the GameCube before, because it was one of the first game out for the Wii, mm-hmm. and the last game out for the GameCube.
I just don't understand why Twilight Princess is more expensive. It's not a bad game, but it's not as good as any of those others that I listed.
It's one of the first Zelda games I played where I wasn't immediately hooked by it and ended up just, I didn't even finish it. I think I maybe got a couple hours into that game and
it's just boring.
Yeah. I couldn't get into it. Like, it was just so, something about it was just not fun. And I couldn't put my finger on it. Like you said, maybe it's just boring, or I didn't like the more realistic style graphics, but there was just something about that game that was just not fun.
I like Ganondorf's story in the game, but that's about it. But I also like his story in Wind Waker more.
Yeah.
And Wind Waker's a better game.
Yeah. Oh, 100% better game.
Yeah. So that was kind of the answer to all the haters of Wind Waker that bashed its animation style. Yeah. Like, okay, this is what you get when you get a more realistic Zelda game. You get a snooze fest.
Yeah.
It takes forever for the story to get going. I don't want to go on a rant about Twilight Princess, but it's one of the lower tiered Zelda games, in my opinion.
Yeah, I always prefer my Zelda games to be more stylized as far as the graphics go.
Well, it's like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. It's a nice blend of the animation from Wind Waker and the realistic looking characters from Twilight Princess.
Yeah, and there's just something about it, like the way that world looks, the way it feels, how there's just something to do around. There's not a moment wasted in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
absolutely.
And for the people that haven't played Tears of the Kingdom yet, you're missing out on one of the greatest games that has ever been made. And I'm going to say that I haven't even finished the game yet, and I'm saying that it's one of the greatest games ever made, and I will stand by that.
Yep, 100%.
But actually, we're running a little bit late tonight, so I think we're going to skip this last little story. It's just an opinion story about a little, it's called The Super Pocket. We'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
But we can go ahead and do video game history real quick if you want to blaze through these real quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. Where is my music? Here it is. Oh, I love this game. I need to review this. July 5th, 1987, The Leisure Suit Larry and the Land of the Lounge Lizards Adventure is released by Sierra Entertainment. I keep saying this every year, but this is the year I'm going to do it. I'm going to find Leisure Suit Larry, and I'm going to play it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm not going to lie, every year when I put this in gaming history, the immature part of me just giggles every time.
Well, it was that forbidden fruit of a game,
yeah,
you know, when I was a kid. And then, like, you look at it as an adult and you're like, this is so lame. Like, why was this such a, you know, such a boogeyman of a game when I was a kid?
Oh, because it's so adult, and then you play it and you're like, it's really not that bad.
Not really.
July 19th of 1991, Square releases Final Fantasy IV in Japan, the first Final Fantasy game for the Super Famicom, released in November as Final Fantasy II in North America.
I was just about to ask, what is it in America? Final Fantasy 18, somewhere, something like that.
It's the sequel, Final Fantasy 18 2.
The pre-sequel to Final Fantasy 18 point four.
17.4.
Yeah, 17.4. The pre-sequel sequel.
Let's not forget 17.9. That's like the Rogue One of Final Fantasy.
But if you'll remember, that one was Final Fantasy 7.92 in Japan, is what that one was.
There should be, you know what would make a great parody for Final Fantasy? Final Fantasy Pi. Yeah. And do 3.14.
We're going to get hate for that one.
I need to make that into like a graphic or something.
And you know, the thing is, I really did love Final Fantasy VII. I really did enjoy that, the original and the remake. And I can't wait for part two of the remake, honestly.
But the you can't defend the number system.
Oh yeah, you can't. Like, there's no keeping track of that. I mean, you can say the same thing about Zelda. I mean, what Zelda goes in what order? Like,
I'll bash the timeline all day long because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
like a handful of games.
And then after 20 years later, after 18 different timelines going off in different directions, like, oh, it's different worlds and different times.
The timeline where Link kills Ganondorf, but he dies from exhaustion, so they're both dead.
July 5th, 1996, Sega and Sonic Team release Nights into Dreams for the Sega Saturn. We talk about this every year. This is probably one of the coolest game covers of the 90s, probably.
This is a game that I've been, much like with you saying Leisure Suit Larry, this is a game I've talked for years about reviewing, and I think this will be the year that I finally do it. Because I remember this game, I never played it. The thing I remember the most about it was that this was back when Archie Comics was doing the Sonic series. They did a 6-issue Nights into Dreams edition of the comic book. And I really liked it. Like, I liked the storyline. So this will be a game that sometime by the end of the year, I'm going to review it.
Well, I put some highlighted notes here in our Google Doc down at the bottom for we still have to do Rocket Knight. For a future, we have to dual review Rocket Knight, and we're going to do Leisure Suit Larry and Nights in the Dreams before the year is out.
Good, because I'll probably forget as soon as this episode's over.
And let's see,
This hurt to put in the Google Doc, by the way. Ouch. July 16th of 2003, this game is now 20 years old. BioWare and LucasArts releases Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic for the Xbox. I remember playing this as soon as it came out, and man, did I put some time into it.
I remember when first playing this for the Xbox, I went and rented it from Blockbuster and immediately went and bought it the second I had to bring it back. This was just a step into a larger world. This is the game that really got me into playing RPGs. Because I had never really gotten into RPGs before this game. And it was because of these Knights of the Old Republic games or why I started playing Mass Effect. Because I saw that the Mass Effect cover at Blockbuster looking for something to rent. And I saw BioWare. And I was like, oh, these are the people that did Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. So I took that home, played it. And I'm like, holy crap, this plays almost exactly like Knights of the Old Republic. And that's when I fell in love with the Mass Effect series. So Knights of the Old Republic just holds so much nostalgia for me.
One of the best games of the 2000s.
Easily. Yep. And easily. Part 2 is even better.
Yeah, Part 2 is great. I think I have more nostalgia for the original, but 2 is probably the better game.
Yeah, I mean, they're both... If you've never played the Knights of the Old Republic games, do yourself a favor. I think they're both available pretty much everywhere. You could definitely on Steam. I think I have Knights of the Old Republic, the remastered version, on the Switch that I bought a couple years ago. Like, it's available everywhere. Just go get it. They're cheap as hell. I think you could buy a copy of it for, like, less than $5. So just go get it. And it is 30 hours worth of enjoyment, at least.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're a Star Wars fan. If you're a Star Wars fan and you've never played Knights of the Old Republic, that is just some killer extended universe stuff.
This is the way.
And it's still considered canon. So if you're going to play something that's canon, go play it.
Do it.
But that's going to bring us to the end of the video game history. And Derek, would you like to do our Patreon shout outs before we go into the review?
As always, we'd like to shout out our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We want to shout out Travis Martin, Raven, Danny House, Justin Nispel, John West, Daniel Salmon, Mr. B. Rez Coffee himself, Mike Eveland, Tyler Watson, Axeblade07, Armez Jackson, Carlos Longoria, a.k.a.
Rampage,
Staff Sergeant Sketch, Gus and Penny, Matthew Salmon, Joey Image, and of course, Mama Diamond herself, Donna Diamond.
Mama Diamond.
Thank you all so much for your continued contributions and keeping the lights on for us here at the Nerd Cave Retro Show. The poll has ended for our commentary track for this month, and Darkwing Duck won, so we will be recording that commentary track later this week. So we'll, if you're a patron, be on the lookout for that. And who knows what we'll do in August, but we've done a ton of different commentary tracks between Christmas Vacation, Clue. We've done Darkwing Duck episodes in the past, Real Ghostbusters, Batman 89. The list is near endless of what we've done. So if you want to be a part of our awesome Patreon community, just head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And for new patrons, send us your social media information, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, so we can give you a proper shout out.
Hey, Derek, have you heard the news?
What news?
We officially have our very own line of coffee at brezcoffeeco.com.
That's right. Nerd Cave Retro now has its very own medium roast coffee.
If you want to try it yourself or even some of the other awesome flavors like Wizard's Potion, which is a butterscotch, caramel, and hazelnut flavored roast.
Or the Dragon's Breath Roast, which is a cinnamon dolce flavored roast.
They have tons of different flavors, and you can also just get a regular Colombian roast and add any flavor to it that you want. They even keep their seasonal roasts all year round.
If you need that boost to get you through those all-night gaming sessions, then head over to brezcoffeeco.com and use the promo code NCR for 10% off your order.
And tonight, Derek's going to be talking about... how some music for the GameCube, some games sound great like that, and then there are some games that just sound like a robot is screaming into your ear, trying to rupture your eardrum.
Well, they just got robbed to write the music for some of the games, and also provide the vocals. So I was telling Jason before we started doing the show, there are certain games that, like, I look back and I'm thinking, wow, we haven't reviewed this game yet. And this is one of them. Kirby's Dream Land, the original Kirby game, the first game in the Kirby series, is a 1992 platform video game developed by HAL Laboratory and published by Nintendo for the Game Boy. It is the first game in the Kirby series and marks the debut of the character. It was released in North America August 1st of 1992. Came out in Japan a couple of months earlier on April 27th. So I've talked about periodically my love of the Game Boy. You know, my grandparents used to have, they had a fishing camp outside of Tallahassee. And we would go there, you know, once or twice a year when I was younger. And that was where I really got into playing the Game Boy. And there were a handful of games that I would just go back to over and over again. And this was one of them. I remember seeing it in the store, and you know, you see the cover art in the Wikipedia article. It's just this little ball of fluff that's flying in the air, and I'm like, this sounds kind of interesting. And you know, me being a huge Mario fan, like I love anything that's a platformer. And I feel like as long as Kirby's been around, because Kirby's still relevant to this day, no one ever really talks about the original Kirby's Dream Land. Like Kirby's Dream Land 3 for the Super Nintendo gets a lot of praise. Kirby's, I think it's called Kirby's Superstar, which is like a compilation of different Kirby games for the Super Nintendo. But this one doesn't really get talked about all that much.
Okay, I just needed to look up. This came out a year before Kirby's Adventure for the NES.
Right. We have reviewed Kirby's Adventure, so you can go back. Believe it was 2019 when we did that, so you can go back a bit in the archives to find that episode. But as far as you know, because I haven't played this game in many years, and it is on the Switch Online as part of the Game Boy section. So when I saw that I hadn't reviewed this yet, I'm thinking, okay, well I'll just, because I was originally going to review Kirby's Dream Land 2, but when I saw I hadn't reviewed this one, I figured I'll just do Kirby's Dream Land 1. I haven't played it in a long time. The graphics are pretty good for a typical Game Boy game. You know, like if you think of the original Game Boy before the color aspect came in, everything had that like greenish kind of background with the navy blue lines. But graphically, I think it looks pretty good for a Game Boy game that came out in 1992. Mm-hmm. Graphics still look like that with certain indie games to this day. So it's not a bad looking game. And I think it's honestly one of the better looking Game Boy games that I've played. Still holds up, in my opinion. The music overall, you know, you played the title track. It sounds good. Like, none of the tracks really stand out to me as far as being like absolutely amazing, but I think they all fit. Every track fits the level that it is associated with. And this game is not very long. It's only got 5 levels in it. And what you do is, if you played a Kirby game, you know how it works. You play as Kirby and you go through these different various levels that are associated with different rooms. And each level has a boss at the end of it. As an adult, the game is pretty easy. Mm. I actually say too easy. I was just sitting on the couch the other night and playing it, and I beat it in less than an hour.
Do you find that that's a lot of the old Game Boy games, especially a lot of the old handheld stuff? They could be beaten pretty quickly these days. And
I don't know if it's hardware limitations, and that, because I remember playing Super Mario Land, the first one, and I could never beat it as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then when I beat it as an adult, I'm like, wow, this game was actually really short.
Yeah.
Like, I would get close to the end, but I'm thinking, because if you think of the original Mario Brothers, it's what, 8 or 9 worlds long.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, you know, this is just me as a kid talking, like, I didn't know any better. I'm thinking the Mario Land game is just as long. I'm like, I'm never going to beat this. And I'm like, wow. When I finally beat it, I'm like, wow, this really wasn't that long of a game. Now, I had beaten Kirby's Dream Land as a kid, but I didn't think any different of it because that's how games were at the time. But I put in the notes that it reminds me of Super Mario Brothers and the original Sonic the Hedgehog. And I've used this analogy before, in that a lot of these series that started back in the 80s and 90s and are still going to this day, you go back and play the original versions, and it's not that they're bad, but they're very basic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at Super Mario Brothers, you have the mushroom, and you've got the fire flower and the star.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. With Sonic, you can get the Chaos Emeralds, but you can't turn into Super Sonic. You don't have the spin dash. Yeah. You don't have Tails. But then elements are added as the series progresses, which is why, like, I'm not going to bash Super Mario Brothers, but I think Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario World are immensely better games.
Oh, yeah.
Than the original. But those games would not exist, mm-hmm, if not for the original Mario Brothers.
But those, like, original games are still fun to go back and play.
Yes.
That's the thing, is they're still fun to go back and play, even though they are, you know, a more simplified version of the things that we love that came later.
Yeah, and it's the exact same thing with Kirby. You know, the next game that came out after this was Kirby's Adventure for the NES, and that was where Kirby's copy ability was introduced.
And I loved that game. I always thought, even when we were talking about in the review, because of the artwork and stuff surrounding Kirby, like the Kirby games and things, like both of these artworks for the game, it looks like a little kid's game. And that's why I never played them back then until, you know, I played Kirby's Adventure a year or two ago and was like, I've been missing out on one of the greatest Nintendo games that was ever made.
Mm-hmm. And it is missed not having the copy ability in this game. Your attacks are very limited. The cool thing is that you can fly for an unlimited period of time. You just, like, you jump up in the air and then you hit, I can't remember if it's the A or the B button, and Kirby basically fills himself full of air, and you can float and fly for as long as you need to. And then you just hit the B button and you shoot out a puff of air, and you're back to normal Kirby. There are a couple of power-ups that give you abilities for a limited amount of time. You get a spicy curry periodically, where you can shoot out fireballs instead of air. And then you get a mint leaf, where you can shoot out unlimited puffs of air as you're flying, and you have to use one of those to beat one of the bosses.
It says here that Kirby's Adventure for the Nintendo was a direct sequel to this game.
Which is funny because the second Game Boy game was called Kirby's Dream Land 2.
Yeah, that's weird.
So I don't, maybe it's because they didn't want a sequel to a handheld game to be on the main console.
Maybe.
Would be my guess.
But do they have the copy ability in Dream Land 2?
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of says here that's where the copy ability was featured in Kirby's Adventure. That's where the copy ability came in.
Right.
So I figured that it would have had to have been in Kirby's Dream Land 2.
And there are other things, too, that are added. I want to say it might be in Kirby's Dream Land 3 where you get different animal partners, kind of like in Donkey Kong Country. Mm. You know how you have like the ostrich and the rhino that you can ride and get to certain areas that you otherwise can't.
Oh, it does say that the copy mechanic was incorporated into Dream Land 2 from Kirby's Adventure. So
Yeah. So really that this is, and I'm not saying Kirby's Dream Land 1 is as good as Sonic the Hedgehog or Super Mario Brothers, but it is like it in the sense that it is a very basic type of platformer. Mm-hmm. So if you've never played Kirby's Dream Land 1 before and you go back and play it now, it's going to seem kind of boring, in my opinion. Whereas me, you know, I grew up with it, so I knew that, you know, Kirby's not going to have those abilities. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean the game's not fun. You know, like the boss fights are pretty fun. They're not really all that challenging. Honestly, the only one that is a challenge to me is the final boss fight with King DDD. And that's because you have to be very patient with how you fight him, because there's only a very limited way that you can actually cause him damage. Mm-hmm. It's either whenever he tries to hit you with his mallet or he jumps up in the air and lands on the ground, these stars come up that you have to inhale and then shoot back out at him. And there's only two situations that can happen. So there's a lot of avoiding him and kind of playing keep away until you can actually cause him damage. So it takes a while to beat him, but it's still a fun game, in my opinion. It's just, there's not a lot of meat on the bone.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Well, like you said, that's most of the original games for the, especially these games that had long legacies. Like you go back and look at the original Legend of Zelda, you know, we talked about it on our Legend of Zelda retrospective not too long ago. Such a simple, you know, gameplay compared to what came after. Still worth going back and playing, but it is nowhere near what, you know, even just a couple of years later for Link to the Past. Like it's still the same type of gameplay, but it's Link to the Past is just like a whole new world compared to the original Legend of Zelda.
It's like the Wizard of Oz. Like the Legend of Zelda, the original is Kansas.
Yeah.
And Link to the Past is Oz. Not to say that the original Legend of Zelda is bad, because I still really like playing that game. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much more to do in a lot of the other games. And it's the same thing with Kirby's Dream Land. If you've never played it, if you're a fan of platformers, I would give it a shot. Mm. But don't expect, you know, like it's a perfect time killer, in my opinion. I put it in my notes too. If you're looking for something to just kill, you know, an hour or maybe 2 hours of your time, and you like platformers, go check out Kirby's Dream Land, the original, because it's still got fun elements. It's just not very challenging, in my opinion. But if you want something a little more, with a little more variety, then check out the sequels or Kirby's Adventure for the NES.
Yeah, and I wonder how I would feel about this game going and playing it after having played Kirby's Adventure. Because like I said, we loved Kirby's Adventure, and then I never went and played any more Kirby games. But how is it going to work for me going back and playing this one where it's kind of a dumbed down version of, you know, Kirby's Adventure, which is excellent.
I don't think you would like it as much, but maybe if you go in with the understanding that there's not as much to do there as there was in Kirby's Adventure, or heck, even Kirby's Dream Land 2, which was also for the Game Boy. But it's still a decent game. And I mean, as far as some of the reviews that it got, you know, Game Rankings gave it a 62%. All Game gave it 4 out of 5 stars. IGN gave it an 8 out of 10. Game Informer's Ben Reeves called it the 14th best Game Boy game and felt that it was a relaxing game. Author Wendy Despain used Kirby's Dream Land's plot as an example of how early platform games' plots progressed, which she collectively described as the main character needing to reach a villain to put a right or wrong. Humongous Life's Jonathan Walgreen called it a strong game but felt it to be too elementary. But I mean, I can't really dispute that, you know, going back and playing it as an adult. But it was still kind of cool. And, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the review, Kirby's still a relevant character. Like, mm-hmm. Kirby games are still being made. He's a popular character in Super Smash Brothers. And even in the story mode of Ultimate, he's the character you start out with.
Yeah.
So Nintendo clearly holds him in a pretty high regard.
Well, I would definitely say if you're like I was and you looked at Kirby as sort of like, oh, that's a kid's game, and you never gave it a chance, go at least give Kirby's Adventure a chance for the NES, because that game was excellent and it mm-hmm. still holds up to this day. Like when I played it, whenever we reviewed it, you know, what was that, a year or two ago, I was blown away by how good that game was. And it's so just, it's got that Nintendo magic. And I can't believe I never played a Kirby game before, you know, before that.
One other thing I'll say about Kirby's Dream Land 1 before I give my number score, there is a harder version, like almost like a second quest from Legend of Zelda. After you beat King Dedede, you can go back to the main menu, and I think you hit up, A, and select at the same time, and it unlocks like a harder mode where there are more enemies, and the boss fights are a little more challenging, so you can do that and maybe you'll enjoy it more if you're trying out Kirby's Dream Land. But I personally liked going back and revisiting, you know, a game that I haven't really played since I was a kid. And it brought back fun memories of being in a car, you know, headed to see my grandparents. Mm-hmm. I brought back cool memories. So rating it as an adult, I would give it a solid 6. Like it's still not a bad game. It's just the sequels offer so much more. And that's not disrespecting it, because as I said, this game had to happen for the better sequels to happen.
Yeah.
But the sequels are better.
Yeah. I mean, like we said earlier, it's a lot like even Metroid comes to mind, like the original Metroid for the NES. Great game, mm-hmm. but hard to go back.
Super Metroid's just so much better.
Yeah, it is. So keep that in mind if you never played the Kirby games before.
Yeah. Yeah. So at some point I'll probably review Kirby's Dream Land 2.
Awesome.
For the Game Boy, maybe later on in the year.
Well, that is going to bring us to the end of the episode. And we just want to let everybody know the winner of this month's top 5 list for next week on Patreon. And if you're a patron, thank you for voting. The winner is top 5 games based on movies. So if you want to give us your top 5 list, top 5 games based on movies, send them to us on Twitter. We have a tab on our Discord, which is our top 5 suggestions tab. Just go there and send us your list. You can either email them or you can send them to us on Facebook. Any one of those will work. And if you're Wally, make sure that you message it to me directly so I don't forget it this month. I'm sorry.
I do have a question about the list. So what qualifies as top 5 game based on a movie? Does it have to be an adaptation of a movie? Or is it just say like Jedi Fallen Order? Like it's in the Star Wars universe, but it's not an adaptation.
That's an interesting question.
I was thinking about that on the way home when I saw that, you know, this one.
I would say that works. You know, if it's a game based off a movie property.
Okay.
And Star Wars started out as a movie property. So any game based off Star Wars will work. Anything like that. If it's based off a movie universe.
That will make my list a lot easier.
Yes. And like we said, the winner of the commentary track poll is, of course, Darkwing Duck. And we're going to record that this week for you guys. And so thank you for voting. And if you want to become a patron and vote on our polls, you got to become a member at the $3 and up tier. But if you just want to support the show and get your own RSS feed without ads, join us for just $1 a month. That's cheaper than a cup of coffee, man.
No, it really is. So. Like gas station coffee's over twice that amount.
Yeah. So, you know, go without a cup of coffee for a day and support us for an entire month off of that.
Yes.
So anything else? What's going on over at the Derek Diamond Experience before we get out of here?
Yeah, so the Derek Diamond Experience is back with new episodes. If you haven't yet, listened to the episode I put out last week with voice actor Richard Epcar. He actually has a pretty cool video game connection. He's the current voice of Raiden in the Mortal Kombat games.
Oh, nice.
He voiced the Joker in the Injustice games. He voiced Ansem in the Kingdom Hearts series, among hundreds of other credits, in addition to, you know, some live action work as well. So go check that out. Linktree.com/DDiamondPodcast. You can subscribe to the audio feed, YouTube channel, and social media all in one location.
And go check out the Open Micers podcast with me and Mr. Jacob Craig. It's at Open Micers on Twitter and Instagram. Last week, we did another Headliners episode where we just talk about the weird headlines of the week. And the week before that, we talked to comedian Mr. Dave Stone, which is one of my favorite shows that we've done to date because that dude is so funny. And if you haven't heard his special, just go listen to it. It's on Spotify. It's pretty much on everywhere right now. It's called Pack a Lunch, and it's one of the funniest stand-ups you will ever hear in your life. So go check that out at Open Micers, Twitter, and Instagram. And Derek, I think that's it. Are we done? Are we done for this week?
I think we're done. Let's get out of here.
If you want to email us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. You can find us at nerdcaveretro.com. That's our link tree. That'll take you to our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, our Patreon, and our merch shop, which you can find at ncrmerch.com, which we have t-shirts, hats, stickers, magnets, bags and mugs, whatever your nerdy little heart desires. You can follow us on social media at NerdCaveRetro, at JakePunktastic, and at Derek_Diamond. And you know what else helps us? Leaving us a review wherever you listen to us. Go leave us a review and or a 5-star rating on all podcasting platforms. So Derek, please tell them what it's all about.
May the way of the hero lead to the Triforce.
Yes.
Master Blaster runs Bartertown.
You blow it!
This podcast is a Zoo House LLC production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.